Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this Thursday afternoon. Got another hour of the show. All right, Indiana is doing their part to fight off this conversation we've had over the course of the show of, is the college football playoffs broken? Because of how many teams who have gotten the bye week so far, if you get a bye week, if you're a top four seed in the college football playoffs, you will lose because 0-6 is where we're at right now. Miami beats Ohio State last night. Then you just witness an absolute bludgeoning of Oregon over Texas Tech. And yet right now, Indiana currently leads Alabama 10-0 in the second quarter. Now, also, if you know anything about Alabama, including what happened last week against Oklahoma, far, far from over. Just interesting to see that offense for Indiana get going on the second drive when their first drive ended in a field goal because it looked like Fernando Mendoza was having some issues inside his helmet being able to hear the play get called. However, it's late enough in the show. Like, you might not have been there for the beginning, and that's quite all right, as we start off usually early on with the rest of the story. So I like to take a look back at all the headlines of the day and of the week with the rest of the story that I like to call the leftovers.
Now, the rest of the story. The rest of the story.
We'll start with the Atlanta Hawks, who are a really, really interesting team right now because they had a 7-game losing streak going into last night. They're able to beat the Minnesota Timberwolves, a truly competitive Western Conference team, and it wasn't even close. The Hawks blow out the Timberwolves last night, 126-102, snap a 7-game losing streak that had included some really competitive basketball. You also kind of wondered how they would come out after losing to the Knicks at home over the weekend, that we also later learned was before the game. They had had a players-only meeting to kind of get through some of the issues that have been going on with this team. I don't think it was anything like personality-wise. Like, that's where the concern comes when you hear about a players-only meeting and like guys don't like each other. I don't get the feeling, as someone who spends time regularly in the Hawks locker room talking to players and such, I don't get the feeling that this team doesn't like each other. I think they just run into issues on the floor of expecting guys to do something that I should be doing myself. And so what we saw last night against the Timberwolves was all guys out on the floor were a part of defending the Timberwolves, which was stopping them from just shooting the lights out on the three-point line. Of course, it helps when Minnesota is much more of a half-court offense than trying to get out and run in transition. The Hawks just handle those teams better because essentially the Hawks want to be the team that is running out in transition and are very good at that, which is why when they run into teams like the Bulls, who want to play fast, it presents a problem. Last night, you had Kristaps Porzingis back in the lineup after he hadn't played since December 5th, dealing with that illness that, you know, has been discussed. POTS is apparently what he is dealing with, an illness that can really, it just affects your head. You can stand up and become very dizzy. So clearly, like, that would impact your ability to practice. It would affect your ability to play basketball. Affects all different points of your life. And so diet is something that you can do to impact that, as well as getting a lot of sleep is apparently, according to what some doctors have discovered about that disease. But Kristaps able to play last night, score 16 points in 17 minutes. Really impressive stuff from him, as he knew he was going to be limited in his time available. Jalen Johnson looking just absolutely like the star that he is turning into. 34 points, 10 rebounds, 6 assists. Dyson Daniels almost has a triple-double himself with 11 points, 9 assists, 8 rebounds. And overall, just a great game for the Hawks to snap that losing streak and for them to look like who they can be in 2026 that we would like to see moving forward. It's also just kind of funny when the game's so frustrating for Anthony Edwards, who was essentially the only consistent offensive piece for Minnesota last night. He gets so frustrated at the end of the game when he is subbed out and the bench is sent in because it's, you know, Chris Finch is waving the white flag. This game is over with. Except the game wasn't over with. There was still time on the clock. Anthony Edwards, though, throws his towel and walks to the locker room. And declined to speak with media after the game. It's just a lot of frustration for that Minnesota team right now that should be a lot better than they were, especially when, Nickeil Alexander-Walker leaves, comes to the Hawks. He's been a huge focal piece of what Atlanta has done this season. He didn't have a huge game against his former team, but he gets the win, and that's the most important part. All right, continuing in the leftovers, let's take a look at the college football playoffs that are continuing right now at the Rose Bowl with Alabama and Indiana. But last night, that was the real shocker of a game. And unless you've watched a lot of college football and know how good Miami can be and has been towards the end of the season, number 10 Miami upsets number 2 Ohio State 24-14. A good sign for the ACC, who could have been left out of the college football playoffs altogether just because obviously Miami was not in the ACC championship game. And instead, Duke wins that conference, and there was just no way Duke was going to be in the college football playoff. But Mark Fletcher had a great game carrying the rock for the Hurricanes, 90 yards on 19 carries. But it was more so Miami's defense and what they were able to do against Julian Sain. I mean, Sain finished the game 22 of 35 for 287 yards, but one touchdown, two interceptions. Bo Jackson was held to be pretty pedestrian, just 55 yards on 11 carries. And the big thing for Bo was like, hey, buddy, you got to pass protect. You got to protect your quarterback. Help out here. And he was unable to do that. I mean, whether it was just that entire defensive line for Miami getting after the quarterback, Reuben Bain and his 30-year-old looking self, even though he's, you know, like 22, 23. Just a really impressive showing from Miami. And now, if Georgia does their part tonight and gets the win over Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl, we could have a rematch of, or not a rematch, we could have Carson Beck facing his former team with Miami and Georgia, but that would mean that Georgia has to get the win tonight, something that teams coming off the bye have not been able to do in the college football playoffs so far. The Sugar Bowl tonight, that's an 8 o'clock game with an Ole Miss team, obviously missing Lane Kiffin and a lot of their offensive staff. Pete Golding, named head coach. I didn't exactly love that decision. I know that Ole Miss wanted some consistency there, but it just felt like you could have at least seen who else was out there and available before you just go and hire a guy that nothing about Pete Golding looks like a head coach. I'm sorry. He is Matt Patricia in my mind, just presentation wise. He feels like a backwards hat kind of guy. Doesn't really ever want to dress up. I know it's not all about presentation. It's obviously about what you do on the football field, but I was just a bit surprised to see that decision made. And yet, last week against Tulane, Ole Miss had zero problems. Trinidad Chambliss, just otherworldly, as they were able to. I mean, that game was out of hand early and never at any point felt competitive. It was 41-3 until garbage time. Tulane was able to get a touchdown at the end of the game to make it 41-10. But with Georgia taking on Ole Miss tonight, two teams that have faced each other, Ole Miss was able to score on their first five offensive possessions of that game earlier in the season. However, Georgia able to get the stops late in the fourth quarter. That's what made the difference. Just totally different teams this time around. And you kind of wonder in this version of the Sugar Bowl what you'll get. But if Georgia's able to win, like I said, they'll go on to face Carson Beck and Miami in the Fiesta Bowl. For the teams that are coming to Mercedes-Benz Stadium next week in the Peach Bowl, you've got Oregon, who absolutely dominated today, Texas Tech. I mean, just unreal what Oregon was able to do when they weren't perfect offensively at all. But Texas Tech's offense was that bad. The defense of the Red Raiders tried to keep them in the game, but Oregon ultimately wins 23-0. And so, as I mentioned earlier, like 0-6 teams with a bye in the college football playoffs are so far. Going on right now, you've got Alabama and Indiana with the Crimson Tide down to the Hoosiers 10-0, about 7 minutes to play in the second quarter. We'll be keeping an eye on that game to see how this whole thing, how this whole college football playoff shakes out. I mentioned earlier some injury news when it comes to the Falcons. Of course, you had Mike Hughes get placed on injured reserve, ending his season. Pass rusher Khalid Kareem was added to the 53-man roster in response to that. The Falcons getting ready to take on the New Orleans Saints to finish out the regular season. I know we had a caller earlier who felt like that game could be a deciding factor into what Arthur Blank ultimately does when it comes to, you know, the coaching staff and that sort of thing. I would certainly hope that that's not the case. I would certainly hope that those decisions were made once the Falcons were taken out of playoff contention. Once there was no chance for the postseason, that's when you make your decisions, because everything from then on out is just about, hey, do these guys have fight in them or do they give up? It's really good to see that the Falcons do have fight when they've been told, hey, you have nothing to play for the rest of the season. Yet, that's not good enough for me. That's just simply not good enough of, hey, we'll run it back because our team didn't give up to end the season. Not good enough. This is a team that should be in the postseason right now, especially looking at an NFC South that's going to be decided upon whether or not the Falcons beat the Saints and what happens between the Panthers and the Bucks. Like, just an absolute mess of a division that the Falcons could have taken hold of if they had won. If they had performed better earlier in the season when it actually mattered. All right, that'll do it for the leftovers. On the other side of the break, we had a really interesting conversation talking about these college football playoffs. And what is going on when it comes to teams getting the bye. What's going on with the Georgia Bulldogs as they get ready to take on the Ole Miss Rebels tonight at 8 in the Sugar Bowl. We had a conversation earlier in the show with Jeremy Johnson. We'll let you hear that again on the other side of the break. Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show on this happy new year for all of you. Hopefully, you're If you're out driving around, you've got us on in the car with you. If you're out next to the grill, I'll be joining you very, very, very soon. I keep thinking about, like, in my refrigerator right now, or actually, maybe my wife might have taken it out by now. Let it rest a little bit. I have a pork loin I am very, very much looking forward to putting on the grill. So hopefully if you're outside enjoying your day, being safe in the car, and taking us and the Odyssey app with you every step of the way. Right now in the Rose Bowl, it's stayed the same as it was when I was talking to you last. Indiana leads Alabama 10-0. It's about 2 minutes to play until halftime. So it'll be interesting to see if anything changes here, if Alabama is able to get some points up on the board before they go into halftime or not. We had an earlier conversation with Jeremy Johnson of Dogs HQ talking about Georgia getting ready to take on Ole Miss tonight, as well as just this whole college football playoff landscape that has seen teams who have gotten a bye go 0-6 to this point, which is why it'll be interesting to see if Indiana is able to change that. We'll let you listen to that conversation now with Jeremy.
I'm good. Happy New Year to you.
Good. I know you are down in New Orleans getting ready to cover the Sugar Bowl tonight, where the Georgia Bulldogs take on the Ole Miss Rebels. Obviously an opportunity for redemption for the Bulldogs to some extent after how last year went. Very different circumstances, obviously, as you know. But with this one element, though, Jeremy, it feels like it's a thing now. As Miami gets the win last night over Ohio State, you see today Oregon gets the win over Texas Tech. Teams with a bye are now 0-6 in the playoffs against a team that gets to play the week before. So with this whole idea of is it a reward to get the bye or is it not, kind of feeling one way or another about how this is affecting the college football playoffs?
I think it just depends on the situation, depends on the team. I think Miami was a team that was playing really well at the end of the season.
Yeah.
And they were able to continue their momentum. You know, last night, obviously, you saw them beating Ohio State. Oregon's a team you can say the same thing about. And Texas Tech, you know, had to go sit and wait around, and Oregon's just hot right now. So I think it just depends on the team. Whereas in Georgia's case, you know, Georgia has some bumps and bruises where that extra week was a help. They may get two guys back in Ethan Barbour and Colby Young that may not have played last week if they had to play. So I think it just matters, with the situation and obviously, you know, the matchup itself.
For sure. What has Kirby Smart been able to do to kind of prepare his team? Because I remember earlier in the season, like he mentioned, you know, talking to other teams and having those conversations about how you prepare yourself. Of course, I remember he was talking, you know, at one point they didn't know whether we were going to play in the SEC championship game or not. What has Kirby been able to do the last couple of weeks to prepare his team for not playing a game?
Yeah, those first 2 weeks, you know, before – you know, everybody knew who the exact opponent would be. They did a lot of, you know, looking in the mirror and self-scouting and trying to figure out, you know, where the deficiencies were on the current team as it was constructed after the Alabama game. So they did a lot of that, you know, that soul searching and got to, you know, see a little bit of themselves a little bit. And then they took a little break right before Christmas, got some time away, got some time to spend with the families, and then they came back and, you know, it was basically like a regular game week after that, and they've been preparing for Ole Miss ever since. I know they got a couple days before the break, too, to kind of look at Ole Miss and Tulane. Haven't already played Ole Miss already, though. Kind of, you know, they've already got a lot of notebook on them already. So preparation, you know, since Christmas, the day after Christmas, has been just like a regular game week, you know. Having to travel there and there. They got on the field, I believe, Tuesday. So, you know, it's been a typical week since Christmas.
Talking with Jeremy Johnson, writer at Dogs HQ on the WaitForIt.com hotline. Jeremy, that game won where it was back and forth. I believe Ole Miss scored on like five straight offensive possessions Getting to the fourth quarter, Georgia's defense is able to get some stops, get off the field, and Georgia's offense able to continue scoring and go on and get the win. How do you see Georgia, how different of a team are they since that Ole Miss game?
I think the secondary has changed a ton for Georgia. That game, they gave up some big plays, and they allow Ole Miss to just march down the field. I mean, I think we'll see some of that tonight because Ole Miss is a very good offense, and I think Trinidad Chambliss is playing as well as probably anybody in college football at the quarterback position right now. So I think that's where it starts. DeMello Jones, Ellis Robinson, those two guys have grown into grown men this year, and especially in the second half of the year. Ellis Robinson is probably one of the best cornerbacks in college football left playing right now. So having those two guys kind of mature and become big pieces of being able to be physical in the run game and then also being sticky in coverage, they're playing a lot more man coverage than they were at that time. You know, it was a lot of zone and stuff, but trying to, you know, ease those guys into college football. But right now they're all playing man coverage, and Dalen Everett is still Dalen Everett, been a 3-year vet. And so, you know, Georgia's secondary has been the key to Georgia's success in the second half of the year. And then the pass rush has gotten better, obviously, with the emergence of Quintavious Johnson and Gabe Harris, who is, you know, dealing with a little bit of an injury. So having those two guys kind of emerge as pass rushers has been huge in addition to having that growth in the secondary for Georgia.
Last year in this game, it was Gunnar Stockton who had played a half of football in the SEC championship game because Carson Beck had gone down. This time around, obviously, very different quarterback. It's felt like he's had some really impressive moments this season and some moments where you're left scratching your head of not knowing who Gunnar Stockton is as a quarterback. As he enters this game tonight, what version of Gunnar do you expect against this Ole Miss defense?
I think we'll see the Gunnar that we saw in the second half of that first game, just because I think he's more healthy. He's had a chance to get his body. His bumps and bruises have been healed. He's had a couple weeks to practice. And if they're able to get Kobe Young back tonight, that's he hasn't had Kobe Young since that first matchup. So, you know, having that big body, that guy that can get down the field and make plays, that's a key to Georgia's offense. And, you know, you combine that with Zachariah Branch, they've had 3 weeks to kind of cook up new ways to get Zachariah the football. So I think that'll be something you'll get see. And I think the run game will be a big part of it for Georgia as well. But, you know, I think Gunner's going to have an opportunity to make some plays with his feet as well. And, you know, he's rested, he's healthy. So, you know, we may see a little more of that than we have over the second half of the year. So I do think he's, you know, gotten the opportunity to grow more confident. And I think, you know, they're going to allow him to play himself. I mean, one of the things Mike Bobo said was a key to that first game was that they just told him to go play free. I expect the message to be kind of similar tonight, that don't worry about making mistakes. Just go out there and play your game. You're good. You can make plays. And I think that's what he's going to go out there and do.
What's your confidence level in Georgia's rush defense, especially as Kawan Lacy, it seems like he should be able to go, had a shoulder injury in that first half against Tulane last week. He's obviously, you know, been the key to what the Rebels have been able to do offensively running the football. What is kind of your confidence level of Georgia in that aspect?
Yeah, Georgia's – they wake up in the morning trying to – the first thing they think about is stopping the run. So I think they'll be able to do that. But not having Gabe Harris out there will play a factor if he does not play. I mean, you don't lose. Like, that guy has been a key part of their run defense in the second half of the year, all year. So, you know, that'll be an interesting piece to watch, just to kind of see how they adjust without him. But I do think that's kind of the initial, you know, part of the plan for Georgia. And I think, you know, Ole Miss likes to spread you out and try to run the ball in so many, you know, creative ways that, you know, you may see a run burst here or there, but overall, I kind of expect Georgia to be able to keep that under control in a way that allows them to not allow Ole Miss to open up their entire playbook throughout the whole game.
Drew Bobo goes down, and yet we saw in the SEC championship, it doesn't slow down what Georgia is able to do offensively. Why is that the case? It feels like when you lose your center, a lot of teams, end up with snap issues. It's too high, it's too low. Fumbles, you know, kind of happen in that aspect. But for Georgia, it felt like they just kind of kept rolling.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think it's because of the development at Georgia. Malachi Tolliver is a player they recruited and really liked in the recruiting process. And he's had a year to sit there and learn. And he had another year of basically learning behind Drew. So he's a guy that's developed and he's a guy that's playing well right now. And he has an opportunity to, you know, be a big part of tonight's game as well. And I think that the rest of that offensive line has played well as also. So he has help around him.
Jeremy, it feels like if Georgia can get past Ole Miss tonight, then we've got an incredible matchup of storylines next week with, you know, Miami making it. It feels like that game is set for, you know, the college football playoff conversation. What would be your concern level? I guess since you're an analyst, you can look past tonight's game. And if we're talking about a win for Georgia tonight, you know, if you're looking at Miami, where do you see Georgia matching up against a team like that, especially with the defense that they showed last night against Ohio State?
I personally think Miami is a team that is the most similar to Georgia in the playoffs right now. And that's weird saying because Alabama is also still in the playoffs, but there's a lot of similarities with how Miami plays defense and how physical they are. They're probably the most physical team in the playoff other than Georgia. So that's a slugfest. I think we'll talk about Malachi Toney. We'll talk about Carson Beck, but that's not where that game is going to be won. It's going to be one where who can contain Reuben Bain, and who can run the football, because Miami can run the football just as well as Georgia can. And that would be the key to that type of matchup. And there's a lot of similarities. So I think it's a slugfest. That's what that game will be. It'll be talked about in spring. There'll be a lot of sprinkles and a lot of elaborate things that we talk about throughout the week. But at the end of the day, that's a trenches game.
Well, hopefully we can get there. That is Jeremy Johnson, writer for Dogs HQ, Rivals, and On3. You can follow him on social media at @JeremyO_Johnson. Jeremy, happy new year, and appreciate you joining us on this Thursday, man.
Happy new year. Thank you, Caleb. You have a good one.
Really appreciate Jeremy joining us. Great conversation as we get ready for that 8 o'clock kickoff in the Sugar Bowl. On the other side of the break, one final segment. We'll end it with news you can lose. Stranger Things ended last night. No, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but what TV show were you just not as interested with when it finally came to the end? It's on the other side of the break. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. One final segment. So we like to wrap things up. Man, it's really interesting what's about to happen in this Rose Bowl. We are at halftime. Ty Simpson fumbles on Alabama's final drive. Indiana takes over, goes down the field, scores a touchdown, and Indiana now leads 17-0. Now, of course, we remember quite literally a week ago, Alabama, Oklahoma. Oklahoma goes up 17-0. Everyone says this game is over. And it's like, yeah, but it's still Alabama. And we know how that one went. I will say this. I think it is very interesting that this game ends up in the same exact way. Indiana, much different football team, and I think better football team than Oklahoma. So, is Kirk Cignetti's team the type to give up a 17-point lead? I don't know. I know Alabama gets the football coming out of the half. So that certainly will play a part of this. You know, if Alabama is able to open the half, go down, score a touchdown, that'll certainly, you know, change the feeling of this game. But three and out, Indiana gets the football with Fernando Mendoza, goes back down the field again. Oof. I mean, surely we won't have two games be non-competitive in this college football playoff. And then, of course, finding out what will happen in the Sugar Bowl tonight with Georgia and Ole Miss. Want to do a couple of things here on this final segment, beginning, of course, with news you can lose. We'll start here. It's been 10 years, but last night finally came to an end. Stranger Things. I don't know if you're a Stranger Things fan. It's a fun show that started off about, four kids playing Dungeons and Dragons in one of their parents' basements and all the crazy sci-fi things that happened to them along the way. Using their knowledge of D&D to be able to deal with all kinds of problems that popped up. It spawned into a lot of other things over the course of these five seasons, but the fifth season came to an end last night as we got back to something that I think a lot of TV shows have missed, which is they actually set a time in which 8 o'clock, the final episode dropped yesterday. And so I know my wife had made plans for us to go and watch it. And so I sat there with her new iPad, actually, that she got for Christmas. I sat there with her iPad watching the Miami-Ohio State game and finishing up watching the final episode of Stranger Things, which was like 2 hours long. Some of these have been 2 hours. Some of them have only been an hour, kind of gone back and forth over the course of the fourth and fifth season. But it really, I when the fifth season first came out, I had the conversation with my wife of like, do I still care? Do I still care that this show is finally ending and there's going to be some closure to the story that I spent time watching over the course of these literally 10 years. It's insane, especially all the flashbacks that they would have of the kids. I mean, they were actual kids, and now they're adults. Like, who? Millie Bobby Brown, who plays 11, quite literally is married with a kid, which is insane that it took this long to actually get the show done. Of course, you know, the writer's strike played a part of this, but there was a lot of other things that went into, budgets of, having these massive budgets in order to pull off the show. Too much time in between seasons is really, I think, an issue that it made me think of what are some of the best shows that had a great start, but by the time you got to the end of the show, a lot of people just like didn't really care because it's already, you've had the reports that have come out that this fifth season is its lowest rated season. And I'm kind of not totally surprised. I think there's just a lot of people who are over the whole Stranger Things idea. And in fact, when it was earlier in 2025, back during the fall, when they started out coming out with other collabs, like they started, Nike did a collab, and I was just like, I don't care about Stranger Things sneakers or shirts or hats or cereal boxes or any of that sort of stuff. That I feel like if they had been able to keep the momentum putting out a new season either every year or every other year, it would have felt different, and I think they would have been able to capture more of the excitement and essence that they had created with the show rather than, 10 years later, now we're ending a show and then they're jumping for, let me not spoil anything, but we do get a jump into the future of seeing what things look like. And that certainly, plays a part in wrapping up this story. But I was thinking like, the first one that jumps out to my mind of like shows that just like went on too long that needed to have ended earlier. And I think for Stranger Things was one that it's not even necessarily that five seasons went on too long. It's just that the time spent between each seasons. But, you know, I mean, Grey's Anatomy, clearly one of those shows that, like, how did that show, how is it still running? How are they still finding new episodes? I know The Office was one that was looked at as, like, did it go a little too long, especially after Michael left? Scrubs was one that, like, that show, so good at the beginning. So good at the beginning. The storylines, the relationships that they built between all the characters. But by the time they wrapped it up, it was, A, on a different network. A lot of, you know, characters had kind of changed in that point, and some people had left, and it just wasn't as interesting. And now I just recently saw they're bringing Scrubs back for a, like, years down the road sort of thing, reviving it, like they've done a lot of, like, you know, kids shows, the Boy Meets Worlds and the likes that have gotten spinoffs and being brought back, and shows that, like, sometimes we should just leave stuff alone. But yeah, it felt like, How I Met Your Mother, another example of a show that feels like just kind of went on a little too long. You lost interest, and by the time it wrapped up, a lot of people were pretty angry, especially with that one, of how it ended. I don't think that Stranger Things will find itself in the group of worst season finales, or series finales, I should say. It did a good job. I won't say anything more than that, because Garrett told me he hadn't finished the show, and I'm sure there's a lot more of you out there. You gotta give it, like, a week before you really start getting into... Yes, bro.
A week?
A week, Garrett.
A week?
And this day and age of television... Look, you do good to make it an hour after the show airs to not end up with spoilers. If you're able to go a week and not have stuff spoiled, that means you either have a social media algorithm that isn't based on, you know, that show that you're watching, or that you're just, like, staying away from that stuff, because it's too much out there that you could have spoil it for you. So... if you're not watching, especially, like, a series finale, I feel like within a week of it, because what am I going to give you, a month to get around to finally finishing the show?
You know,
it's tough. Like, I'll give you more than 24 hours, and with the show dropping at 8 o'clock last night, like, I certainly won't get into any spoilers, but I will say this: they did a good job wrapping up the show. I think they did a good job wrapping up the show. They won't find themselves in any of those considerations for worst series finale of all time. All right, another thing I wanted to get into in News You Can Lose, and this is related to tonight's Sugar Bowl, is Lane Kiffin will not be at the Sugar Bowl tonight. And for some of you, you might go, okay, well, obviously, he's no longer the head coach of Ole Miss. You would be correct. However, Lane Kiffin will not be at tonight's Sugar Bowl because he lobbied ESPN to be on the broadcast during one of the quarters, and they declined his request to come on ESPN and to be able to talk about the team and his new venture of going to LSU. Honestly, I'm shocked, because this feels like the sort of thing... And this day and age of ESPN, this feels like the sort of thing that they would be all about. Oh, we can have the former head coach on the broadcast. We can, you know, talk about things related to the team and how he wishes he was able to still coach in this game. And, oh, you know, the mean AD didn't give him the opportunity and all that sort of stuff. I'm kind of shocked that ESPN was like, nah, we're good. We're good. Apparently, the governor of Louisiana, because, I mean, you know, the game is in New Orleans. Lane was invited by the governor to come up in his suite and watch the game. And apparently Lane turned down that opportunity. And I'm thinking, hey, Lane, we saw how the governor was intervening with decisions being made at your school. You sure you want to declined that request. But yeah, I just thought kind of one more story to make me not like Lane, as if that was already that difficult. But apparently Lane Kiffin will not be at the Sugar Bowl tonight for Georgia Ole Miss, simply because he requested to be on the broadcast and was told by ESPN, nah, we're not interested. All right, one final story I'll get into in News You Can Lose, and then we'll wrap things up with a participation trophy. This one is just like, is nothing sacred, is nothing able to be turned into a marketing opportunity. And the answer is no. Anything can be turned into a marketing opportunity, including Johnny Manziel and his lack of appearance on College Game Day. Johnny Manziel, as a lot of people noticed, was supposed to be the guest day picker for College Game Day for Texas A&M. That did not end up happening. He did not appear on College Game Day. They had a last second switch up that went to Alex Caruso. And there was no mention of Johnny Manziel other than he wasn't able to appear. I had seen that same weekend, Johnny was expected to do some other like media stuff that actually might have clashed with his ability to be on College Game Day. He did not appear for anything. Of course, conversations come up as to whether, alcohol or drugs were at play for Johnny again, because that has been such a thing for him in his past. Well, Johnny Manziel came out this week on his social media to say you can now use Kalshi to determine whether or not he will be on College Game Day again. Yes, Kalshi, the predictions market betting opportunity. Maybe they won't call it betting, but that's what it is. It's just, a brand deal for Johnny Manziel to come out and thumb his nose at like, oh yeah, I didn't appear, and you guys can vote on whether or not I'll be asked back on College Game Day. I know LeBron did this with his decision two that we all knew was going to be something dumb, and then it ends up being brand related with, I think, like an alcohol release or whatever. I hate seeing these big stories come out. I know Trey Young had one of these where it was people were wondering, oh, is he announcing that he, plans to ask out and leave the Hawks? And no, it was just to market another alcohol brand that he was associated with in some marketing scheme. It's just, is nothing sacred is really what I ask, because you see the stuff and it feels really silly. All right, one final thing on the Dopey Millennial Show. Let's hand out a participation trophy. Look, I like to hand these out sometimes to people who don't deserve being recognized, and then sometimes it is for people who absolutely deserve to be recognized and there isn't any special award to give them. Well, I'm giving my participation trophy today to Dave O'Brien, who announced yesterday he is retiring from sports journalism, a guy who has covered the Braves for a number of years, has kind of been an interesting one to watch from afar as I've been in the Braves press box and locker room covering the team the last few seasons. From time to time, I think, what Dave has done, whether he was at the AJC or then switching over to the Athletic, he gave Braves fans deep insight into the team. He also was not afraid to offer up his opinion. And I think something, that stands for something. And so shout out to Dave O'Brien retiring after 41 years in the industry and the number of years covering the Atlanta Braves. That'll do it for my time on the Dopey Millennial Show. Appreciate Garrett Chapman joining me the last 4 hours. You got Eric Slaughter coming up next. Go ahead and give me a follow on social media at ATLJohnson18. Until next time, you guys have a good one.